In W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas.
Today, we made a difference.
Senator Susan Collins of Maine, after the Senate passed bipartisan legislation to protect same-sex marriages. Lisa Dwyer has more.
It's an extraordinary sign of shifting national politics on the issue and a measure of relief for hundreds of thousands of same-sex couples who have married since the Supreme Court's 2015 decision that legalized gay marriage nationwide. The bill ensures that same-sex and interracial marriages are enshrined in federal law.
Oath Keepers founders Stuart Rhodes and Kelly Meggs, who led the Florida chapter, have been found guilty of seditious conspiracy for plotting an armed rebellion to stop the transfer of power after the 2020 presidential election. The rarely used Civil War era charge calls for up to 20 years behind bars. Three other associates were cleared of that charge. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says Ukraine will one day become a member of the alliance.
Our meeting here in Bucharest is sending a strong message of NATO unity and of sustained support for Ukraine.
It's a commitment that NATO leaders made 14 years ago, but some say it led in part to Russia's invasion. A Walmart employee who says she barely missed being shot last week in gunfire that left six co-workers dead has filed a $50 million lawsuit. Norman Hall has details.
The lawsuit filed in court in Chesapeake, Virginia, says Walmart allegedly continued to employ the shooter, a store supervisor, despite what it calls Andre Bing's known propensities for violence, threats, and strange behavior. The plaintiff is Danya Priolo. She alleges that she has experienced post-traumatic stress disorder, including physical and emotional distress. Walmart, which is headquartered in Bentonville, Arkansas, said in a statement that it was reviewing the complaint and will respond as appropriate in court. I'm Norman Hall.
This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
I love this song.
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Darrow became famous in Wisconsin for presiding over the Darrell Brooks trial. Now we're getting word she'll announce she's running for Wisconsin Supreme Court tomorrow. That's according to Channel 4 TV in Milwaukee, which cites Darrow's husband. She was appointed by former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and is reportedly active in the Republican Party. It's the time of year for car deer crashes. There have been about 16,000 deer crashes in Wisconsin over the past 2 years. Some auto body shops say they're booked out until March as more drivers choose to fix their cars than buy new. Deer are most active at dawn and at dusk. In sports, Badger men's basketball hosts Wake Forest tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, here in Atlanta, Georgia, here for the Georgia runoff election, and spent some time today, you know, with my Teamster brothers and sisters out talking with members and getting some of the reactions that, you know, I got to tell you, I find very interesting. I find it interesting that you have, you know, union voters who are going to look at someone like Herschel Walker and go, that's my guy. When you have Raphael Warnock, who voted to save their pensions, when you have someone like Warnock, who is going to support the right of workers to join and form unions, going to support the right of workers to be encouraged to do that. We've heard nothing out of the Walker camp about organizing and about jobs. And in fact, I haven't heard a lot of much. In fact, you know, the reality is, I don't think he's answered a question from the media or from any reporters in a couple of months. And you start thinking about, you know, how, you know, this isn't how government is supposed to be run when you have somebody who completely unaccountable, unwilling to answer any questions, unwilling to, you know, to run a campaign. And there are people who go, yeah, that's our guy. I struggle with that. I struggle with it mightily. And you know, I got a lot of today the religious frame. You know, we care about, you know, the babies, and we care about, you know, religious stuff, and, you know, all this. And you go, I'm confused, because, you know, if religion is your thing, if you know, your faith is your thing, you literally have a reverend, a you know, a person who has devoted his life to good. I mean, this really is an interesting moment where you have, you know, one guy who's, you know, living the Christian lifestyle, you know, married to the same woman, you know, no abortions that have been brought forth by women saying, no, none of that. And then you've got, well, Herschel Walker, who has been the poster child of what the right is supposed to be against. And that's the part that I'm struggling with. Like, I get you bought the hat. I get that. You bought the hat. Oh, we got the T-shirt. We put the flag in the ground. I got it. I'm an R. I get it. But this guy, I mean, it's almost sad, and it got me thinking today and having a conversation around, you know, the movie Idiocracy. If you've ever seen that, where it really wasn't about governing, it was you know, a sideshow. It was, you know, it was politic for entertainment's sake. And everything was breaking down. This is kind of where we are. And I go back to what we talked about in the last segment, this idea of being on these teams, these polar opposites, where we're not talking about how we're moving forward, how we're going to solve problems. And I keep coming back to this. There's a moment where you have to solve society's problems. You have to at least try. Hunger, poverty, homelessness, you know, poor educational opportunities, you know, healthcare, you know, all these problems that Republicans are great at pointing out. It's like the cartoon dog, you know, pointing his finger over there, over there, over there, without any solutions. Because the sad reality is, while they're pointing their finger over there and getting us to look over there, over here, they're robbing us blind. And this is where, you know, having that conversation around, you know, back in the old days when we used to tax the very wealthy and we used to tax corporate America, things were a little different. And this is why I'm in this weird moment, because, you know, I look at someone like Herschel Walker, who, you know, just, you know, 5 years ago would have been completely unelectable. But here we are with a guy who, you know, almost won the vote. And there's a real concern right now on the ground that the enthusiasm isn't there because the Senate's already been decided. Democrats are going to hold the Senate. That this election isn't as important as it was in the past. And that's a concern. Now, I did have a conversation with someone who said, look, you know, Herschel Walker is going to be a yes man vote. He's not going to actually go and do the work. And, you know, I said this already. He's going to be the rubber stamp for corporate America. He's going to be the rubber stamp for taking rights away from women and minorities, and which is very bizarre, but that's the reality. And it comes back to this team sport. This team sport, it's mind blowing to me. Now, when we did our tour, and we talked to a lot of Republicans, we talked to a lot of people. The first thing out of the bag was always jobs, the economy. First thing was always, you know, better life, you know, this kind of stuff. Now it's the social issues. It's the transgenders. It's what we've heard on outrage radio for years. So you get where it's coming from. You get how, you know, a large portion of our population has been indoctrinated with crazy talk. What 10 years ago we would have called crazy talk. It's insane. Why would you say or think such a, how do you think this guy's qualified to be in that office? But now we're so, well, in our camps that it doesn't matter. Now the scary part, and this is where I think, you know, Democrats and you know, sane, rational people had better be concerned. I look at Pennsylvania, where someone like Doug Mastriano pulled, you know, 42% of the vote, 40% of the vote. A large chunk of my neighbors voted for somebody who, wow, as close to a Nazi as we've had in a very long time. And I don't say that lightly. Someone who, you know, an election denier, was there for the insurrection. You know, wanted to, you know, gut education, wanted to privatize, was going to, you know, push that and the whole no rights at work agenda, was going to do all these draconian things in his mind to make us the Florida of the Northeast. And look, you know, if he gets his way on climate change, man, we may be. But the sad reality is he's still got a large portion of the vote. A lot of people voted, pulled that lever. For someone who 10 years ago wholly unelectable. So I generally ask people, you know, well, I'm voting for, you know, if you don't mind me asking, you know, why? What is it that attracts you to his campaign? And sadly, you know, what keeps coming back is it's the abortion issue, which oddly enough, there are now two women who have come forth and say that, you know, he paid them and, you know, coerced them into having abortions. And one of the memes that I saw was, you know, was spot on. Or a woman, you know, asked the question, do I have to be Herschel Walker's girlfriend to get an abortion? I don't know. Again, this is a do as I say, not as I do kind of moment. And I look at this and I keep coming back to, how is it we've gotten to this place where someone like Walker is palatable? And it's because we're so polarized. It's because we're in our camps that it doesn't matter who gets thrown up. As long as he's on the right team, as long as he got the right letter behind his name, as long as they're one of us. Even if they're not one of us. And that's the weird part of this. I got that vibe a bunch as well. You know what I didn't hear from anyone who was going to support Walker? How he was going to work to make their lives better. And that's the weird part in all of this. Because, you know, for me, you know, politics is about, you know, who gets what. And the wealthy and powerful will continue to get what they want. And the rest of us, not so much. And this is why I'm hoping, again, hoping that we have this awakening moment. We come to some bit of reality. But it's not going to be anytime soon. I look at the fact that our former president, and am I surprised that he had dinner with a white supremacist? No, I'm not surprised by it. Am I surprised that he's not pushing back on it? No, I'm not surprised. A little, not, I don't want to use surprised. A little hopeful. Because you see people like Marco Rubio who came out and said that, told CNN that this white supremacist, this Nick Fuentes, was a purveyor and a spreader of an evil poison. And, you know, basically he said that, you know, but Trump isn't an anti-Semite. Yeah, sure, he surrounds himself with anti-Semites, but it's not him. And he said that he hopes Trump would condemn Fuentes for his positions. But he said, look, I know Donald Trump's not an anti-Semite. I can tell you that for a fact. Donald Trump is not, but this guy is evil. It's this guy over here. Everybody, look over here. Look at this guy. Never mind the Donald Trump part of it. It's this nasty, disgusting person. This, in his words, quote, this ass clown. A U.S. senator says that on TV. And I'm going, okay, I get it. You want us to be distracted. You want us to look over here and go, yeah, that Nick Fuentes is a bad guy. And he is. Without going, why would you have Donald Trump? Why would you have him in the same room with you? You know, did your mother never tell you you're judged by the people you keep company with, the people you break bread with? Did mom never tell you that? Didn't they teach you that at the boarding school? So it's interesting in watching as the Republican Party, now you see the full-on attempt to purge him from the party happening right before our very eyes. This is happening. When you get Pat Boone to come out and say that he's praying Trump doesn't run again, that becomes a moment of interest. That becomes a, wow, Pat Robertson doesn't, or I mean, Pat Boone, I keep saying Pat Robertson. Pat Boone, you know, I'm surprised he didn't sing it. But said, you know, he doesn't think Trump should run again. He said, I don't think there are enough Republicans who would vote for him so he could be elected. But he was his own worst enemy in his manner and his speech. And he made so many enemies that while he could be a great president again, if he muted his speech and all that, which I'm not sure he's capable of, I would advise him, please don't run. I think you will divide the Republican Party even more. I go, yeah. It's like Mike Lindell running for the RNC head, which I hope he gets. I hope he gets his wish, his hope, his demand. Hope he gets it. Want him to get it. Want him to be the head of the RNC. Maybe Randy Quaid can be his co-chair. Maybe the both of them can turn that circus, well, into a circus. Now, what I find interesting are the people who are trying to defend Trump, people like Rubio. Trying to defend him. Well, you know, he's not an anti-Semite. He's none of those. No, he just surrounds himself with them. Now you have some other ones, you know, Susan Collins, Bill Cassidy. You've got some who are condemning him, saying you should condemn this white nationalist Nick Fuentes. You should do all these things. Interestingly enough, none of them are up for election in 2024. The other one, being here in Georgia, I see Brian Kemp has come out and basically slammed Trump for having dinner with this white supremacist. Then you go, there it is. Brian Kemp is now officially a candidate for president in 2024. Because, look, we know he set up a super PAC here recently, trying to take in some money. The thought was he might run for Senate, but I'm telling you, aspirations at the top. There's going to be a void when Trump falls. And you know, I keep saying the hope is that come election time, that happens, that we get the chance to in a resounding fashion, turn him away. But here's the thing. This is where the concern is. Someone like Mastriano got 42% of the vote. Someone that 10 years ago we would have found wholly unacceptable on either side of the aisle. So there's something going on here. There's a moment here that we've got to pay attention to. And I'll tell you, this election means a lot more than just, you know, another seat in the U.S. Senate. This is kind of for the heart and soul. And my fear is people are tired. You know, we've talked to a number of people who are just going, okay, I'm just tired. There's you know, this is too much. And that's part of the plan. That's part of the game. Get us worn out. Wear us down. I just want to be left alone. So that you drop out and you don't vote. That's why this election, for my listeners in Georgia, this election is that important. You know, I was sat and I thought about it. You know, because as I have these conversations with people, you know, new things pop up all the time. You know, for instance, this is one of those amazing for instance. The home that Herschel Walker claimed that was his, that he lives in to claim residency here in Georgia, evidently he rented out just before he launched his campaign. So where he says he actually lives, he doesn't, unless he's squatting with somebody, but not really his home in Atlanta. So where is Herschel? I don't know, you know, and this is kind of got to be a problem going forward, which is why I hope come Tuesday next week, the people of Georgia get out. I'm hoping they find their enthusiasm. They find their enthusiasm and they get out and they vote. That is the ultimate hope in my view. And we end up with someone like Raphael Warnock, who is a good, decent man. Everything I've seen is a good, decent man. If religion is your thing, he's a good man of the cloth. But still, just at the end of it, a good, decent guy. Someone who cares about his fellow citizens. Someone who cares about workers. Someone who cares about our society. I can't say that about Herschel Walker. And that is frustrating. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break right back here from Atlanta. If you missed any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1832. American author Louisa May Alcott was born in Germantown, Pennsylvania. Alcott is most well known for her classic book Little Women and its two sequels. She also wrote a novel called Work, A Story of Experience. Alcott drew on her personal experiences for the novel. She herself had to go to work to support her family at an early age. She worked as a teacher, a seamstress, a governess, and a writer. In her novel, Alcott tells the story of Christy Devon, a young woman trying to support herself in spite of all the odds stacked against her. In the book, Christy makes the difficult decision to leave her family to enter the workforce. She explains to her uncle, "I am willing to work, but I want work that I can put my heart into and feel that it does me good. No matter how hard it is, I only ask for a chance to be a useful, happy woman, and I don't think that is a bad ambition." She starts with several odd jobs, and the book traces Christy's journey as she tries different work opportunities. The book ends with Christy becoming an activist, giving a new voice to working women. The novel explores issues of social justice, women's rights, and their roles beyond the family. This book also uncovers the changing nature of women's work in the new industrial era. Although it's a fictional account, the book captures the experiences of many women of that age. As Alcott wrote, Christie was one of that large class of women who, moderately endowed with talents, earnest and true-hearted, are driven by necessity, temperament, or principle out into the world to find support, happiness, and homes for themselves. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to Atlanta, Georgia. And I got to tell you, I love Atlanta. Traffic. Wow. Wow. Did I mention wow? The traffic? I've got a lot of miles under my belt. I've got a lot of miles. Some of the most interesting driving that I have seen in a very long time right here in the ATL. Very, very interesting. And look, when in Rome, you kind of, I have seen more people run stop signs and red lights here in Atlanta than I've seen probably in all of the 1.5 to 2 million miles that I've driven. Wow. I guess that's the best I can come up with. This is where public transit. How do I use public transit? Because it's got to be safer. But the area, lovely, lovely place. I've had a wonderful time. And look, at the end of the day, there's this. There are these preconceived notions about the South and the folks that we've met. And look, even people we've disagreed with. And there have been, shockingly, people who disagree with me, they face-to-face, very cordial. And it gave us this opportunity to talk about, social media, to talk about, Twitter. We've spent a lot of time on Elon Musk and that nonsense and that, that show. But the reality, we got to get back to this face-to-face stuff. And that's why I think what the unions are doing here, going out, talking to their members, going out and talking to voters, educating on real issues, not on the things that outrage radio feeds people, but actually the issues. And for the Teamsters that I spent the day with, their issues were, look, Joe Biden signed the Bush-Lewis Act into law that is going to save millions of retirees, going to save their pensions. Donald Trump didn't do it. Barack Obama didn't do it. Joe Biden did. This has been something that they have been trying to get help with for a very long time. Now, understand, what's happened to the pension system in this country is the employers have gone, hey, we're gonna not fund it, and then we're going to rob it blind when we file bankruptcy. And, we're going to crush unions so that there are no new members to be in these plans. So if you're not going to have laws that encourage people to join and form unions, you're not going to have laws that make it easier and more streamlined, even in a place like here in Atlanta, you're going to have problems. And that pension issue is a big one, along with the PRO Act, getting more people. I can't tell you how many people that we've run into here who've gone, I'm not in the union, but boy, I sure wish I was. I sure wish I were a member. I sure wish I had that opportunity. I sure wish that were something that I could do. But sadly, and again, I keep coming back to this, sadly, our laws are so badly broken and antiquated. And this is why I come back to why this election is important. Ensuring that someone like Raphael Warnock is in the Senate pushing for workers' rights, pushing for the ability to join and form unions. And look, if we had 60 senators, back in the old days, there used to be Republicans who supported this too. It isn't that partisan of an issue. But again, I look at what happened in Chicago and look at what happened in Illinois. This idea that, if you let those unions have their rights, It's gonna be bad for the rest of us. If you let workers have rights, it's gonna be bad. And it kind of goes to show you that they still fear organized workers because they know what it means. It means less profit for them. Now, it means better communities. It means stronger schools. It means a lot of positive.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
The bakers of Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads are proud to support local education with Loaves for Learning, the program that makes it easy to earn money for your school. Enjoy Country Hearth and Village Hearth all-natural breads, buns, bagels, and more, then save the UPC from the package for your school to collect and redeem. Each is worth 5 cents and can be used for books, computers, sports, music, whatever your school needs, up to $10,000 a year. Learn more at loavesforlearning.com. Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
Hi, it's Don Brown, host of This Week in Waukesha, inviting you to catch our coverage of this year's 2022 Waukesha Christmas Parade, Sunday, December 4th. The coverage starts at 3, the parade starts at 4. We'll be live in front of the Walk Radio Studios talking to the marchers, the participants, the fans, and all the people that make this parade in this community a very special place. Waukesha Christmas Parade, covered here on Walk Radio 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
They were going to show a video of Roger Stone recorded by Danish filmmakers.
Just Google Roger Stone Monopoly Man.
You remember the old Batman TV series? He looks like the Penguin.
It's like a bad costume for A Christmas Carol.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And I know that firsthand because I was in that every year as a kid. Always a street urchin, never a Cratchit.
That needs to be the title of your autobiography. Always a street urchin, never a Cratchit.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on The Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
And we're live here outside the Perez family home just waiting for the... And there they go! Almost on time this morning. Mom is coming out the front door strong with a double-arm kid carry. Looks like Dad has the bags. Daughter is bringing up the rear. Oh, but the diaper bag wasn't closed. Diapers and toys are everywhere. Ooh, but Mom has just nailed the perfect car seat buckle for the toddler. And now the eldest daughter, who looks to be about 9 or 10, has secured herself in the booster seat. Dad zips the bag closed, and they're off. Ah, but looks like Mom doesn't realize her coffee cup is still on the roof of the car. And there it goes. Oh, that's a shame. That mug was a fam favorite.
Don't sweat the small stuff. Just nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Learn more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinair with your headlines. More and more parents and caregivers are taking time off work to stay home and care for sick children. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows workplace absences for childcare reasons rose to an all-time high in October. This year's respiratory illness season began early. Kids are coming home from daycare and school with everything from RSV, with or without pneumonia, to colds, rashes, and even strep. Childcare facilities already facing widespread worker shortages. Sick time and paid leave became a rallying cry during the onset of the COVID pandemic, with employers encouraging workers to stay home when sick, and workplaces made their policies more flexible so people could take care of their families. However, people in high-paying jobs are more likely to have access to paid time off. Lower-wage workers and people of color have considerably fewer workplace benefits. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Voting. What could possibly go wrong with that?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, I've been waiting all day. In fact, I've been waiting a couple of days to talk about this email. Now, look, I've got thick skin. I've taken abuse from people over the years. I've gotten threatened. All kinds of stuff. You name it. I've seen just about all of it. And look, I've had people, attack me personally, attack me physically, appearance-wise, you name it. I've had people, do dumb stuff. But this email got my attention. And it's one of those things that's just, I've had people say, I can't stand you. Every time I turn you off. And I'm like, that's okay. That's called freedom of choice. You have the ability to turn a channel. You don't like what I say. You don't like what I do. That's part of this gig. Some people like it. Some people don't. Some people find me interesting. Some people don't. This woman, she writes me, when your show comes on, I switch over to public radio. She says, I'm a huge supporter of our progressive radio station and progressive causes, union, and your message. So you go, hold on, stop. Then if you agree with what I talk about, you agree with the message, you agree with the stations that we're on that do the work that they do, why are you leaving? Well, she says, so why do I turn you off? It's your voice. I'm like, okay, maybe you don't like the sound. Look, I don't like the sound of my own voice. Very few people like the sound of their own voice. I'm like, look, if it grates on your nerves, I get that. There are some people that, I don't like listening to because it's like nails on a chalkboard. I get it. So I'm like, okay, I get it. She says, I try to tolerate it, but I just can't. Just can't do it. Can't tolerate it. It has, and this is where the fun part comes in. It has, according to her, what I identify as a feigned huskiness in an attempt, I imagine, to emulate that tough blue-collar male manual laborer. I think it's feigned because I've heard you do other interviews where you have dropped the affection and just spoke normally. And I go, wait a second. This is how I talk normally. The feigned huskiness of a blue collar. Who would do that? Honestly, I wrote her back, and we had a couple of emails back and forth where I'm going, here's the thing. It's who I am. I've been a blue collar worker all my life. In fact, I work on a shipping dock. I drive a truck. My hands are calloused. I got cuts all over them. My boots are dirty. That's who I am. It's not feigned. It's not something that I'm attempting to play up. It's just who I am. And, I played this read this to my wife, and she's like, man, you can't please some people. And you're right. You can't please some people. But here's where it gets interesting. Because you go, well, okay, you don't like the fact that I speak the way I do. And I get that. Fine. She goes, why does it bother me? Because according to her, it harks to a time when the labor union movement was dominated by men. It doesn't respect the massive contribution of women in the modern workforce. And frankly, it reminds me of unions' beginnings when men might have been struggling for their own rights in the workforce, but were enforcing male domination at home, often abusive. I don't want to honor those times, so I turn you off. So somehow, I have turned into the proverbial dog for all of the bad things that men have done in the past. Okay, if this is what does it for you, if this is what makes you feel better about yourself, good. Turn the channel. I want you to. Because I don't want to cause you grief or pain or harassment or feel somehow abused. But it is interesting that this was the argument. Now, you agree with everything they talk about. You agree with the causes. You agree with the message. But I don't like your delivery. And you go, is it that simple to divide and conquer the working class of this country? And the answer is yes. It is that simple to divide us, to pit us against each other, to slice and dice. But because I'm a man, and this, I got to think this goes well beyond just radio, but it becomes one of these moments where you're going, I can't help you. But if we're this easily divided, if this is something that pits us against each other, because I refuse to respond back with any derogatory comments, I just simply said, I feel sad for you if this is how you feel. I know there's nothing I can do. I apologize in advance for causing you harm. But it's so simple to tear us apart. Because understand the dividing lines. The dividing lines have always been male, female, black, white, gay, straight. You know, you name the fault lines. And the wealth class of this country uses them masterfully to pit us against each other. And for me, this idea that, you know, this was going to be a dividing point instead of something where we could have had a conversation going, you know, hey, you're right. The unions of the past were run by men because that was the workforce. The unions of the past did coalesce around ethnic lines, around race lines. Absolutely, they did. But you learn those lessons. It's like everything. You want to learn from the past and not do it again in the future. It's the same thing when you talk about education and that theory, that theory about race that's critical. You know, why do we teach actual history? Well, so that we don't do it again. Does that seem simple? Does it seem rational, sane? Yes, of course it does, which is probably why not going to happen. But, you know, I found it very interesting that this woman's thought process was, she's going to help me by attacking me. She's going to help me by going, well, you stop being you, be somebody that I like, and then I'll listen. And that's not how this gig works. That's not how the game works. I am who I am. I am unfiltered. You get what you see. I say what I think. But I'm amused that this is a dividing line. I'm amused that this is one of those things that tears us apart, and saddened. Again, I come back to this saddened part. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you've got a thought, a question, if is there something wrong with my voice? Is my huskiness feigned? I wish the huskiness could be feigned in other ways. Outside of my voice. But I want to thank you for the email. And look, it made for good conversations. And this is why I do like extreme emails. I do like people who pick on me. So by all means, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right here. We're back right after this. Again, if you miss any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 2012. That was the day that more than 100 fast food workers in New York City walked off the job. They held a one-day strike for better wages and the right to form a union. It was the biggest fast food workers' strike up until that time. The movement soon grew to be much, much bigger. Their demand was simple and memorable: a $15 an hour minimum wage. The slogan became the Fight for 15 and a Union. The campaign found an ally in SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. By August of 2013, the movement held a national strike against
low pay day of action. Fast food workers and their supporters held demonstrations in 60 cities. Today, the movement has spread to 300 cities and beyond the United States. While protesters have gathered at many fast food chains, McDonald's has become a focus of the campaign. Protesters have held annual one-day demonstrations at McDonald's headquarters just outside of Chicago. The campaign has seen victories. Both New York and California have passed a $15 an hour minimum wage law. So has the city of Seattle. Although it's a national and even international movement, it is also a grassroots effort. In each city, different local groups are involved. In Kansas City, fast food women workers have formed the Fannie Lou Hamer Women's Committee. They named their group after the civil rights champion. They take inspiration from her famous quote that she was sick and tired of being sick and tired. For many in the Fight for 15 movement, this sums up their involvement. It is a movement for the respect and dignity of workers and the right to earn a living wage. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Again, if you miss any portion of the program, podcast, wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. We are there for you. Now, here's interesting sales numbers after Black Friday. Gun sales, third highest gun sale day in history. Got to make the NRA all tingly in the panties, very thrilled by, ooh boy, more guns being sold. I got it. There's part of me that has this thought in my head, however, that a lot of those guns being sold are being sold to, well, people I don't know that the NRA would be thrilled with. Because I got to tell you, the number of people on the left that I have talked to recently who have been going, yep, I don't have a choice. We have a government that won't do anything to protect people in their work, in their spaces. We have a political system that is broken and incapable of dealing with real problems. And the fear, this is the fear that I have, that everyone thinks they're, you know, Wyatt Earp and, you know, it's the wild, wild west. But the manufacturers, oh boy, thrilled. In fact, third best sales day they've ever had. Third best, and that was Black Friday. Now, the other two best days were Black Fridays as well, because they got all the good deals on Black Friday. But 2017 and 2019, those were the other two big days. And I got to wonder, you know, don't we have enough? Again, don't we have enough? And I got into this conversation, again, around this election cycle on the gun issue. Well, you know, Warnock just wants to take our guns. And I don't know that to be the case. And we have that gun control argument. Comes up every time this issue, you know, rears its head. Talking about, you know, do you believe in gun control or don't you? And the reality is everybody believes in gun control. Everybody. I've yet to meet somebody who goes, you know, Rick, I think I would like you to have a stealth bomber. I think I would like you to have a thermonuclear weapon. I think you would like, I'd like you to have a Scud missile. You know, I've yet to find that person that goes, no, you're special. You have the right to bear these arms. And the reality is we don't. So when you're talking about gun control, talking about the right to bear arms and the right to bear arm control, everyone agrees that there is the right to do it. It's a matter of where you draw the line. Some people are saying, you know, maybe, you know, do we need to have these weapons of war? Now, I go back to, and this is a story I've told before a couple of times, actually. When I first moved to Pennsylvania, I took a job up in a rural part of the state. And one of my first days on the job, there was a guy who was talking about this big gun he bought. And he was, you know, just orgasmic is the word that comes to mind. He was, and again, this is going back, you know, 93. I mean, we're talking a long time ago. So the ammosexual frame wasn't something that people talked about, but he embodied all of this. He embodied all of the ammosexual kind of, because this story that he went on and told, that he must have put, you know, just hours of thought into and fantasy into, was one of the most X-rated kind of stories that I think I have ever heard. And it was frightening to me that this person would put the kind of detail, the kind of thought into, well, killing somebody. The fantasy was someone would break into his house and he would whip out his big gun. And, you know, most normal people would go, you know, somebody breaks in my house, I'm gonna take my gun, I'm going to shoot him. And it was that simple. You know, you go, this was a 20-minute, the entire lunch period, a 20-minute fetish, a fantasy that you go, exactly why are you thinking like this? You know, who put this in your head? You know, what deficiency in your day? What deficiency in your diet? What is it that's caused this? And I still struggle with that. And I remember when he was finished, I just looked at him and I go, you know, I got to tell you, if there was ever a guy who should not have a gun, it's you. This idea that the fantasy of taking someone's life, of putting yourself in that kind of danger. And now look, you know, I took private police training when I was a young man. The thought at some point I might want to be a policeman, and I didn't follow that path. But, you know, I took some of the training and I, you know, did the firearm stuff and all that. And one of the things that I absolutely remember is, you know, when you're doing the firearms training, is if you're going to pull it out, you better be willing to use it. Because at the time, now again, this is going back into the 90s, the early 90s, it was something like, you know, 60% of police officers killed in the line of duty are killed within 3 feet with their own weapon. So when you add a gun to the mix, things get more dangerous. And it makes sense. And the argument was, if you're going to pull it out, you better use it. And this is a person who, you know, sadly had put so much time, energy, and fantasy into this. It was, my mind was like, you know, it's almost like he would encourage it. And this is the weird world that we're now kind of in, because I think back to that guy back then. To me, that was a red flag back then. And how many of the people who have gone and shot up, you know, gay nightclubs or gone and shot up schools, how many people have had that kind of fetish fantasy? Now, I've asked a lot of my gun friends, have you ever had that thought? And everyone, yeah, you know, somebody breaks in my house, I'm going to defend myself. And you go, okay, I get that. You want to defend yourself and your family? Of course. Duh. But do you spend time, you know, fantasizing how you would do it? And, you know, where the gun would be? And it was, again, the last person who should own a gun was that guy right there. So I look at this, and again, I come back to this moment where we hopefully begin to have some sanity. Nothing's going to happen for the next 2 years. We're here in Atlanta to try and get Reverend Warnock put back in the Senate. I think he's a good man. I think he's a decent man. I think he's an honest man. That, you know, to be honest, in this day and age is the best we're going to get out of some people. But he's somebody who is going to stand up for working people. Now, understand, you know, it's not going to matter. The Senate is already on the Democratic side. The House is going to be run by Republicans, which means nothing for the next 2 years will get done. It will be lots of fantasy, you know, hearings. There will be lots of, we're going to hear about Hunter Biden's laptop. But in the Senate, I want somebody who's going to be in there fighting for me. I want somebody who's going to be in there fighting for working people. And this is that kind of a moment.
This is that kind of opportunity where, as a country, and I think the eyes of the country are on Georgia right now. What direction will they take? What path will they move? And this is kind of a moment for the country. Again, I come back to this because the choices could not be clearer. And yet, the polling that I'm seeing is way too close. There's all this report out there that, voter apathy. Haven't seen that yet. I see people who are tired. I see people who are working way too hard. I see people who are working way too many hours and trying to figure out how they're going to fit this in. How are they going to fit in going to the polls and voting? And then the stories of these long lines and, it plays into the hey, just stay home. But these are the kind of elections where you can't stay home. And I'm hoping the people here in Georgia, look, on both sides. I want the true pulse of we the people. And I want everyone to have the opportunity freely and fairly to cast their ballot. Is that too much to ask? Now, we used to believe in those things. We did. We used to believe in those things at one point. I know I did. Still do. And yet here in this state, one person can challenge thousands of ballots. One person can challenge thousands of people's ability to cast their ballot. It's insane to me. They've taken this runoff period from a 60-day runoff period down to a 30-day period. And in this truncated time frame, the idea that you're going to be able to ramp up a get-out-the-vote operation, they don't want that. The fact that people are waiting in lines to put their ballots in a drop box because they've limited those numbers is insane to me. So for me, the idea is the rest of the country is watching. They're watching right now, and this could be, look, if we get what I would argue to be the dumbest guy ever to serve in the U.S. Senate elected, we've got bigger problems than just one guy in the Senate. The message that's going to send, frightening. Frightening. But as always, I want to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I mean, this is one of those things that are just remarkable to me. Also, Twitter. Twitter is going to allow COVID misinformation. We're going to have miracle cures. In fact, I'm getting stuff from Twitter all the time. I'm going, this is snake oil. But it's free under the guise of free speech. We're bringing free speech back, everybody. You're going to be able to say whatever you want. And what that really means is the white supremacists and the neo-Nazis and those folks, they're going to be able to use the N-word. Because it's what they really want. It's what gets them all tingly in the panties. They're going to be able to say mean things to people without fear of being canceled. Man, you can't cancel me. I'll call. And I go back to, these are things that people say online that they would never say to someone in person. These are things that, quite frankly, it's one of those things my grandfather always said. Never write something down you don't want your grandmother to read. There's always a part of me. And maybe in your social media life, it's this as well. There's always a part of me that would want to send this stuff to their mother. Go, do you know what your son's doing? You know what your daughter's doing? Have you read this filth? And get those, get mom to read mean tweets. I mean, seriously, I think that would be interesting. But, my grandfather said, never write anything down that you don't want your grandmother to hear or read. And that was always good advice. Now, also, don't say things that are going to get you beat up. Always good advice as well. But, it's this moment that we find ourselves where we're the worst versions of ourselves online. We're the worst versions of ourselves when we think there's a bit of anonymity and no one can touch us or find us. So when someone like Elon Musk says, it's open season, I got a question. What's that going to mean? How bad will this be for working class people? Because ultimately, that's sadly who pays the price. It's the working people who pay the price in all of this. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Again, miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your podcast, you will find ours. Share with your friends, neighbors, coworkers. Get it out there. Also want to hear your thoughts. As I've said, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Eventually, I get to them. So if you haven't heard from me yet, you will. But I appreciate you tuning in. We'll be back here in Atlanta tomorrow. And we'll see you then. Thanks so much for being here. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.